Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, another city project is discovered to be surprisingly over budget. Convention center upgrades. Council members are concerned. The Panthers want $212 million to upgrade Bank of America Stadium for a possible Major League Soccer team. CMPD Chief Kerputney promises de-escalation will be clearly cited as the goal when new deadly force policy guidelines are released in October, and the deal to buy and save the historic Excelsior Club falls through. What that means. Our roundtable of reporters is ready to detail those and other stories, and we begin with David Borax from WFAE News. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Hello to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Katie Peralta, your print person in arms, is senior editor and reporter for the Charlotte Agenda, but you're not in print. You're in digital now, right?
Print is kind of a loose term. It's just the written word.
That's right. There are words.
We're just trying to survive, right?
There are words involved. And Joe Bruno is a reporter for WSOC-TV, Channel 9, Eyewitness News. Hello to you.
Hello.
We're all in the studio. If that's not enough, you can watch us on Facebook Live. We have spoken in the past about the inevitability of Panther owner David Tepper coming to City Council to ask for help in funding the new domed stadium, which we will have in the future. But this week, Charlotte City Council heard a request in a closed-door session on Monday, and I think the figure ranges from $110 to $212 million for Bank of America Stadium upgrades in anticipation of Major League Soccer. Was this a surprise?
I think the timing is a surprise. What I think is happening, we don't have all the details, but I think what he is doing is making Bank of America Stadium general improvements and combining that with soccer, what he needs to satisfy the MLS. So we all knew that there would be some improvements to Bank of America Stadium to tide them over until they get to the stadium, the dome stadium that you were very insistent upon earlier. So I don't think that's a surprise, but the timing is, and I think what's driving that is Major League Soccer is saying to David Tepper, if you want a team, you have to assure us that the stadium is going to be ready along with all the other things you've done.
I'm just in favor of the dome stadium because I put a roof on my house and the improvement has been just remarkable.
So is your roof retractable at your home?
No. Well, it depends on what kind of a storm it is. Go ahead.
So, Mike, what this is going to pay for is stadium upgrades. There'll be a training facility for this future team. There'll be team offices here in Charlotte,
right.
as Eric pointed out in his coverage this week. Even though the football team is moving to South Carolina, there would be an MLS team based here in Charlotte. What's interesting to me is that this is coming now, and it shows just how hard Tepper and his team are pushing to get an MLS franchise. Yeah. There's really an open-ended schedule for the MLS right now, and they haven't said when they're going to pick the next team. Charlotte does seem to be closely in the running for one of the next two that are coming.
So MLS Commissioner Don Garber in Orlando this summer was talking about Charlotte's prospects and, you know, kind of reemphasized that they remain very impressed with Charlotte, yada, yada. But the stadium thing is kind of the sticker. Like, it's giving them a little bit of pause because it's something like 20 of the 24 MLS teams that are currently playing have MLS-specific stadiums. And the ones that don't, you know, they have quote-unquote special circumstances, or, you know, they have new facilities like Atlanta that was also built to accommodate MLS. So this is like they kind of feel the fire under their seat a little bit because the MLS is moving very quickly and they want to make sure that they get in front of them with a, you know, buttoned up plan.
Joe. And you mentioned the dome. Something to put out there right now is, at least from what sources have told us, the dome is not under consideration at point. The renovations to Bank of America Stadium that they discussed involved creating a middle entrance so that players walk onto the field from the middle of Bank of America Stadium and not the sides. That's a very soccer thing. And then also new locker rooms. Another thing to say is the $100 to $200 million estimate, that's just an estimate right now. There isn't a hard cost, but there is thought that those funds would come out of the tourism fund, which is a fund
specifically. Don't get ahead. We have a lot of questions.
Okay.
Don't give the whole show away in the first 5 minutes.
Mike, good. Can I add just one small note? So what the Panthers and David Tepper are saying to city government is that they will put in $425 million all told between franchise fees fees and startup costs and so on. And so then the city would put in $100 to $200 million, give or take.
Okay, so now we don't have a team. How this either means one of two things, that David Tepper and his group are really confident that if they do these things, they will come, MLS will come, or they need to get it done so they can put in a pitch that will at least get their notice, because we've gone through this.
No, they've got their notice, Mike. There's no doubt. I think if the city approves this, I expect that the team will be awarded before the end of the year.
They have a punch list that they're working through, and this is all part of that. And
so that's that 90-day thing that you were talking about in your reporting, David, the fact that they want to do this by the end of the year. They have this 90-day push to secure a stadium and practice headquarters. That's what
right.
that's about?
And that's, I think this is a symbol of what's happening, is they're really going through that list of things that they need to get lined up.
And I think it's interesting, because if you look at the figure, that 212 million number is, I think, much larger than the prior proposal for an entirely separate MLS stadium that Marcus Smith had talked about in 2017.
But Panther President Tom Glick has said there is no timetable, so why the rush?
Well, he said, I think what he was saying more is there's no timetable for him to give us more information, is the way I took it. But they have been so aggressive. Remember this, earlier this summer, the Panthers secured a deal with Ally Financial to be the lead sponsor, which in soccer is on the uniform, the kit, as soccer people like to call it. And it is generally thought to be one of the larger sponsorships in MLS, assuming all of that takes place and there is a team and an actual kit to put the logo on.
Yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence that last month Commissioner Garber was here talking to Mayor Vi Lyles, and now this month they're talking about potential renovations to Bank of America.
So you were talking about one of the things that they want to do is put in a middle entrance, because that's where players in soccer come from.
A TV shot for a soccer game.
Yes.
Okay. So that obviously takes money, because you got to carve out part of the wall in the stadium to make that happen. But the Panthers are going to move their headquarters in the next couple of years to Rock Hill. And this is going to be, they need renovations for the headquarters for the soccer team, if we get it. Why don't they just use the old Panthers headquarters? Why do they need to upgrade the locker rooms?
Why do you think so?
Do they need to put new names on the lockers? Is that what they have to do?
Well, there are a couple things.
Cam share?
First of all, the Panthers are not going to get rid of their locker rooms. So the Panthers really don't have a training center right now.
Right.
What they do is they operate out of the stadium. So whatever happens, you're going to need space for the soccer team. Now, I think the first natural question would have been, well, why not put them in Rock Hill? And I think the answer is probably, well, if I can get something from the state of South Carolina, and then I can turn around and get something from the city of Charlotte to help me build a separate headquarters, why would I not do that?
Also, MLS would like a team downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me throw some water on this, can I, for just a second?
Oh, my.
We know there's going to be a dome stadium. We know it. We know that request is coming.
You have willed it.
Yes. Well, Jerry Richardson said this, that when a new owner comes in, there's going to be a new Panther stadium, and you had better be ready. And we're not going to say no to that. It's just not going to happen. So if we're going to be asked for money for a new dome stadium in what, a year, two, 3 years, is it wise to put $200 million into the old stadium?
I think that is a question that people are going to be asking, and that's probably a big reason why they wanted these closed session minutes to be closed, because these are it seems almost as if this $212 million is like a Band-Aid, like a temporary fix on the stadium before we build this new $2 billion stadium that would look, somewhat like Atlanta's.
You just said the magic word.
Band-Aid?
Closed meeting. They had a closed meeting about this on
I am
Monday.
Stuck on Band-Aid.
So why do we know about this?
If it was leakers.
Leakers. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That's the second magic word, because Tariq Bakari, city councilman, was pretty upset about this leak that came out of the meeting, so much so that he did a Facebook Live commentary from his car. He drives a nice car, by the way, in which he took the leakers to task.
These are the worst kind of people. Whoever is doing this, one or multiple, is the worst kind of person to be in office, because not only are they harming the city, either purposely or with unintended consequences, we now sit in a position where we're scratching our heads saying, how do we do this going forward? Do we even have closed sessions anymore? Because essentially, when we have a closed session, which by the way is important, because the alternative to closed session is individual meetings, which isn't breaking any public meeting laws, But no one's taking minutes there. People are taking meeting minutes in our closed session conversation. So at some point, the public gets to see what it was that everyone says and what was promised. If we don't do that important tool that is granted to us from the General Assembly, then you get into a position of backroom conversations, one-off, trying to figure out, is this possible or not?
So are these leaks from these closed-door meetings out of the ordinary?
Absolutely not. Leaking has happened in the past, and it will happen
gambling,
in the future.
Gambling, Joe. Gambling.
I'm pretty sure we heard similar commentary about leakers coming from the White House recently, and I was very, very surprised.
It's a Republican thing, isn't it?
I guess so, huh?
The alternative to leaking isn't just one-on-one meetings. The alternative is doing the business in public. We're talking about MLS. We're not talking about Amazon or Honeywell. They're not recruiting a company here. The competition for MLS in Charlotte is we don't get MLS. So they could have brought this proposal to the public in a public setting and had that same discussion that they had behind closed doors in front of everyone.
Tarek spent a long time. This went on for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes in his car on this Facebook thing. But he spent a long time during what he called a rant. He admitted this was his rant about the dangers posed by these leakers. But he also had a message for us.
I hope any members of the press corps that are covering this and out there, you've got to do your job. I understand that. It's not your fault that someone told you this. And you're going to cover that information as it comes to you. No one would ask you to give up your source. We understand the importance in media and journalism of maintaining a source. I'm not asking that. I am asking you to remember the portion of this story that is dangerous to Charlotte, and it's dangerous that this information, while incorrect, is also against the purpose why we are granted the ability to have these closed session conversations.
So, given the danger here, should we take that into consideration? I mean, these are not exactly the Pentagon Papers.
Right. No, I think Joe answered that statement pretty well. That we're talking about soccer.
What are the dangers? The danger is something that we can't make critical decisions.
I think that what he's saying is that they can't go through negotiating tactics without it all being public that would hurt the competitive process. I think that's what he's
saying. So what did we get wrong? Because he said we got it wrong.
I think backing up to like Monday, I think it was, or Tuesday, the days kind of run together. If you weren't in like the direct like media ecosystem, you probably wouldn't have been able to keep straight what on earth different people were reporting, because I think it was WBTV's initial report was about city council considering, you know, that $100 to $200 million for a separate MLS stadium. And I think that is what initially set off a bunch of city council members to go out and say, this is wrong. These reports are wrong. WCCB maybe put out a statement saying, the media reports out there are incorrect. City council is going to put out a statement clarifying the situation, which, by the way, didn't clarify the situation. So it was all very confusing. But I think the initial like knee-jerk backlash was the report about a separate MLS stadium was incorrect.
So if the council says yes to this, and there's some question about whether this council should vote on this, or whether the next council, which takes office in December, should vote on it, because there'll be a new council, but it will probably be largely made up of this council, given the way the election is shaken out. But where would the money come from?
Well, this is a really good question. The last time I talked to Marcus Jones about money for MLS, I think he said there was about $90 million in capacity, but they were looking, to see where else they could find money. Again, as Joe mentioned, this is all coming from tourism-related taxes, hotel, motel, food and beverage taxes, which must be spent on something related to tourism, and pro sports teams fit into that. But that $90 million number, I'm sure, does not include the economic impact of having a soccer team here or anything else that the Panthers are doing. So it's not clear to me how much money there is, but it would come from that source.
More to talk about still about this Panther or soccer deal and how it affects the current team, among other things, when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks and the Local News Roundup on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with our roundtable of reporters, our cloverleaf-shaped table of reporters. Eric Spanberg is here from the Charlotte Business Journal, Katie Peralta from the Charlotte Agenda, Joe Bruno from WSOC-TV News, and David Borax from WFAE News. We've been talking mostly about the stadium and about bringing soccer here, because David Tepper is going to put in a bid for Major League Soccer. David Tepper is the richest owner in the NFL. Good for him. He anticipates paying expansion costs of $250 million to $325 million for the team, for the rights to the team, which is above the $200 million entry fee paid by St. Louis. So he's willing to pay that much more, which begs the question that will be raised by a lot of citizens. Why, if he can afford to pay that much, do we have to pay anything?
Well, what he said all along, whether people like it or don't, and, you know, every sports conversation boils down to this: do you think taxpayer money should go into these projects? And so what's going to happen? First of all, Tepper has always said he wants a public-private partnership and whatever it is, and what that means is he'll pay some and government will pay some. The argument for that is the economic benefit and the attention and the public relations and all those kinds of things, and we could have 79 shows about whether that's true or not, and we have and will. But I also wanted to mention, Mike, when you were at the end of that segment, you were asking about the balance, or David was talking about the balance of the tourism tax money. There was a fight on Monday night. This is interesting, given what had happened earlier in the day. We didn't know when council was talking Monday night that they had talked about soccer. But they were talking about the convention center, which you mentioned earlier, and these cost overruns. Same bucket of money is in play there. And there was a lengthy discussion about how much debt capacity is in that tourism fund. And no one with the city could really answer that question. And council members got very frustrated about that. And so in you know, in this context now, you can see they were probably doubly frustrated, because here they are weighing this soccer project and they have the cost overruns and they don't know what the debt capacity is.
And looking back on that conversation, knowing what we know now, there were some hints to what was discussed earlier, because a couple council members were like, we know what's coming down the pipeline. We need to know what the debt capacity is.
So, Katie, if David Tepper gets an MLS franchise to come here and play in the stadium, what happens to the Independents? That's our minor league soccer team, for whom stadium renovations at Memorial Stadium are underway even as we speak.
This is a question that readers have been asking for, I think, 3 years now, because Charlotte's had this other pro soccer team that kind of got run over a little bit, if you recall.
That's the term that the owner used with the Bruton Smith situation. I mean, the Marcus Smith situation.
Right.
Go ahead.
To quote Jim McFilliamy, he got, you know, kind of run over, steamrolled, whatever, back in 2017.
So for people who didn't live here then, let's go back in time.
Let's go back in time.
Because Jim McFilliamy is the president and the managing partner of the Independents. He was the person that brought minor league soccer to town. Yep. They play out, what, in Matthews? They wanted to move it to Memorial Stadium. That began. They got the, I think they got some of the money. It began. And then the Charlotte Motor Speedway people, Marcus Smith, got involved because they wanted to bring MLS to town. And then what happened with that?
So Jim had been in talks with the county for, I think, 5 years or something like that, ever since like 2014 or 2015, to renovate Memorial Stadium, to make it, kind of bring it up to speed, modernize it, so that it could be home to the Independents. There are several advantages to that. Of course, having a stadium more central and uptown is good for ticket sales. The Independents have not been doing as well as they'd like in terms of ticket sales. You know, when 2017 rolled around, or 2016, whatever it is, Marcus Smith did not get his MLS franchise, but he had used the stadium proposal that kind of centered on raising Memorial Stadium and putting a brand new MLS facility in its place. That didn't happen, but at the same time, Jim kind of had to hit pause on his plan. So the fate of the Independents back then was really kind of up in a question mark.
So what about their fate now?
Their fate now, they have signed a 10-year agreement, as Eric and myself and others have reported. And they will play at Memorial Stadium regardless of whether David Tepper gets his team or not.
Really? If nobody comes? I mean, can we support two soccer teams in this city?
Here's the thing. There are several advantages of having a minor league team that could be some sort of affiliate to the major league team. Minor league teams also have youth programs. Jim also wants to launch a women's league. League. There, and so, you know, kind of from the development perspective and from the, you know, fan growth perspective, I think there's a lot of advantage to having some sort of relationship with the independents. That said, Jim has not been working with David Tepper on his particular bid, but that's not, you know, it's not to say it's too late to do that. So,
but I think things are on a more friendly footing with David Tepper than they were with the Smiths. And let me just say that many of the pro soccer teams in the MLS have kind of youth to adult organizations, and David Tepper doesn't have that. He won't have that. And I think you're right. I mean, I think we will see some kind of an arrangement if this comes together where the two organizations affiliate and you have a kind of a training, you know, youth to adult to professional ladder there for these players.
Joe Bruno.
And there is some precedent. The MLS and USL do have cities where they coexist. Atlanta comes to mind.
Right. So as long before we move off the topic of Bank of America Stadium, let us bring up something else, Katie, that you wrote about this week, and that is that the singer of Uptown Girl is coming to Uptown Charlotte's Bank of America Stadium. Everybody's all a Twitter about this. There was a full-page ad in the Observer for it. Billy Joel is on the way. And they were saying that, you know, for the first time ever in Charlotte, Billy Joel will sing in a stadium. He'll be this tall. this is another, I'd rather see him at the arena. But this is another change that has resulted from the sale of the stadium and the Panthers to David Tepper, because he wants to make use of this stadium and the new Dome Stadium that you've heard about, I think, Eric, that's coming. It's one of the calling cards. This makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's something we've all reported that he's been talking about ever since he took over as owner, that he wants to make this a stadium that's used 365 days a year. He wants to make it more of a place for the rest of the community. So this is sort of not a long time coming, but it was all part of the plan. And it was I talked to one source within the team that said they had to do quote-unquote root canal-like work, to get a team together in a sufficient amount of time to work with Live Nation kind of constantly to build this relationship, get the logistics right, and convince them that, like, yeah, even though we haven't hosted a concert in almost a decade, we're a good place to do it, and we're not going to embarrass you.
Well, you just wonder, Billy Joel? I mean,
yeah, but Billy Joel sells out. Yeah,
Madison Square Garden once a month in New York.
I think another name like Taylor Swift or Beyonce or somebody like that would have been pretty cool.
Well, I think all those names are going to be coming. I think that's what really the big takeaway from this is that Live Nation, the fact that they were there, it's not just that the show is coming here, but that you have the COO at the press conference. That tells you that the Panthers have done a lot of legwork to convince them that they want to have a lot of shows there.
Months ago when we talked about this, David Tepper has said that Charlotte has to come to understand that we will be and are set up to be the entertainment and sports capital of the Carolinas. And this plays right into that. It also plays right into the Dome Stadium, because if you want to do 365 events, it can't rain when Billy Joel comes here or they'll cancel the concert. And that's another reason why you have to have a Dome Stadium. If you all recall, when Barack Obama was nominated at the convention here, he was supposed to make his big acceptance address at the stadium, and there was a threat of thunderstorms, and so they moved it.
And it poured all week for anyone who was here. I mean, it didn't just sprinkle. It rained big time. So, Mike, you will get your dome. That's the conclusion.
Thank you very much.
And, David, you will get your Taylor Swift one day. I will put my money on it. For everyone who's tired of driving to Atlanta to see Taylor, I mean, I would put money on it.
David Borax, lover. All right.
It was all about me.
All right. Patrick Conway, the president and CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina, that's the state's largest insurer, resigned on Wednesday after new information emerged about his arrest in June on a DWI charge. What happened at that arrest in June?
The video is disturbing. And then you take it up another level when you find out that his two kids were in the car at the time of the crash. And then it goes up another level when you find out that he threatened police officers. Yeah, and then you kick it up another notch when he invokes Governor Cooper's name and says, "I'll call Governor Cooper. You don't know who I am." This was awful on all levels.
Yeah, police say that his car was weaving in and out of the other lane. And when they stopped the car, this is all anecdotal, that his children looked
It's in the video.
Well, the video.
The video shows the car weaving and shows him hitting the truck as well. And the person who took the video is gasping as this is happening. So this actually happened. Now, the police report is where we find out that his two kids, both of whom were under 10 years old, were in the car with him at the time. And the officer who stopped the car looked to see if they were okay, and they were apparently very shaken up.
Yeah.
And then he encountered Conway, who apparently gave him a very hard time.
So this resignation comes after increasing pressure from insurance regulators. Mike Causey is North Carolina Insurance Commissioner, and he called for Conway's resignation.
There is no path forward for this office to have a trusting, confident, and reliable working relationship with the Chief Executive Officer of Blue Cross North Carolina. I can deal with the criminal charges as bad as they are, but I cannot accept the cover-up, the misrepresentation of facts, the lack of respect for oversight and regulation of a company, and lack of respect for law enforcement officers who are doing their duty.
So insurance commission officials were also furious, evidently, that Blue Cross failed to share details of Conway's arrest while the company negotiated a potential partnership with Cambia Health, which is another company out of Oregon. At the time, Blue Cross was standing by Conway and waiting for due process. Is that why they withheld the details? They were just waiting for this to go through the system?
That's what they say. I mean, it's very telling the way that this all played out after the fact, looking at it. I think there's like several problems at play. They're obviously furious and disturbed by the fact that this guy had a DWI, the way that he handled it, the fact that his kids were in the car. But then the cover-up is the other thing. You know, if this is the way they're going to do business early on, what does that say about the relationship?
They say that they didn't know about the details that came out in the police report and that video that surfaced this past week. And seeing that, the board finally at 11 o'clock in the night, 11 o'clock the other night after Causey was calling for resignation, the board met and they asked for and received Conway's resignation. They said that what they saw in those new materials depicted behavior that falls short of their standards. And so I think that as this unraveled this week, it was inevitable that this would come to resignation.
Because previously they had said he'd gone through a 30-day substance abuse program, and they were satisfied with that.
Did the insurance
what was their investigation like, though, that they didn't allegedly contact the Archdale police to find out
get
what happened here?
Get the police report.
Here,
right. That's a basic part of vetting, I would think.
Yeah. Blue Cross halted the merger talks with that company on Tuesday after these new details emerged about in the media about his arrest. The new details we're talking about is just the police report, the body cam footage. Is that what caused them to halt the talks?
Not body cam.
It was
footage.
A cell phone video.
Cell phone video. Okay. So the merger would have combined these two companies, covered 6 million people, raised $16 billion in combined revenue. Will those negotiations resume? Or is it done now?
I think that the next thing that happens is they, you know, get an interim CEO. They try to right the ship and see where it's going and see if it still points to that. The other company, Cambia, has said it's on hold for now. They haven't given any indication that they're going to drop it. But I think a lot of this will rest on what happens in the next couple of weeks.
Potentially sad news for the West Side this week. The Excelsior Club, which has a stellar and important history to Charlotte, and particularly to Charlotte's West Side, their future now seems uncertain because there was a California investor scheduled to buy the Excelsior Club, which was also scheduled for the wrecking ball if somebody didn't buy it, and they dropped out. Why?
The price. Just the thing that trips up many deals. The price was set at $1.5 million. And apparently this prospective buyer was trying to bargain that down. The building is in really bad shape. It's condemned at the moment. So, you know, anybody who comes in is going to have to do a lot of work to get it back up to snuff. The Mecklenburg Historical Commission was handling this, and they say we're back to ground zero now, starting over on a search. And there's a critical timeline here because the Historical Commission has delayed the fact that the owner of the building could tear it down right now, and that delay has now ended. And so this could be torn down any day if Carla Cunningham, the owner, wanted to do so. I think they're hoping that somebody else will come forward here. But there is some question about why wasn't the owner willing to negotiate the price down a bit, and we don't know the answer to
that. Well, and also it does look like there is a continuing interest in trying to get county and city government to find a way to preserve this property. So we'll see if that starts to move now that this has fallen apart.
It's right out there on Beatty's Ford Road for people who don't know where it is. It's just beyond Johnson C. Smith University.
I just don't see the city and county getting involved with this with that price being as high as it is.
Okay. Last year, Charlotte City Council was surprised, and I'm not kidding about this. They were genuinely surprised to learn that the cost of the Cross Charlotte Trail construction was underestimated by $77 million, and they don't know where the money's going to come to. I guess they didn't know at the time where it was going to come to fix that. But this week, they were told that plans to upgrade the Charlotte Convention Center, which originally had a $98 million budget, will come in closer to $114.5 million. That's $16.5 million more than anticipated. The miscalculation on the Greenway was blamed on outdated budgeting estimation processes by both, mostly by city planners and the former city manager. What's the reason this?
Yeah, happens? And remember, so that happened at the city retreat, and Marcus Jones, who has been the city manager since December 2016, attributed that to faulty forecasting that was carried out before he was in charge of things. The situation this week was all about subcontractors and the soaring prices that the hot economy is driving. And so they are electricians, plumbers are able to ask for more money. Now, what you heard from some council members is, hey, wait a minute, we're only talking about a period of roughly 10 months and the economy's been cooking along pretty well for a long time here. We might need a new way of doing this. They didn't really resolve that. So they are going to fund it, but they haven't really figured out how they're going to reconfigure estimates.
Of the 51 bid packages they had for this project, 22 came in over budget, and that included mechanical, stucco, plumbing, things of that nature.
And they did find about $4.5 million from various sources, but they're still about $12 million short.
So council members are frustrated. Once again, Tariq Bakari, this is his week on this program, said that there's only so many times that we can have situations like this arise before the community loses faith in us. In whom? The elected officials or the paid professional management staff?
Yes. I mean, I don't know how anyone could be watching this and not lose faith. By the way, not only are you going over budget by roughly 17%, they've taken things out of the renovations, including one of the two pedestrian bridges. That's a pretty significant piece of what they were attempting to do. So they have a big problem here in restoring faith that when they say something's going to cost X, it's going to cost X.
So very quickly, because I have 45 seconds, the money, if they find the money, will it come out of the same pot that the stadium renovations will
have? Yes, sir.
Okay, so is there money for that? Can we
do
both?
That's a very good question, Mike, but we could get an answer to that.
All right, the convention center is also a major economic driver, and expanding it is supposed to expand its economic driving capabilities. Can the overruns be made up in the revenue?
Tom Murray of the CRVA says it will, and within 6 years.
Okay, when we come back, Ring video. You think you have a Ring doorbell?
Hello?
It may be spying on you. We'll tell you about that in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup, and that explains why all these people are around this table. And that would be David Borax from WFAE News, Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal, Joe Bruno, who is a reporter for WSSC TV Channel 9 Eyewitness News, and Katie Peralta, senior editor and reporter for the Charlotte Agenda. Before we talk about doorbells, CMPD Chief Kerputney said this week that he will make de-escalation the goal of police when his department's revised use of force policy is finished by the end of October. The pressure has been coming from the NAACP and Safe Coalition. At the Police Citizen Review Board is also recommending changes in policy at the police. All of this will be part of the package released in October? Do we know?
Not sure.
That's the timeline, I believe.
All right. So Putney has said many times that the presence of a gun in the hands of a suspect limits an officer's practical ability to de-escalate. How do you do both?
Well, he said that again this week. He said that when there is a gun in someone's hand, that does change the capability of de-escalation. And at the same time, he was saying there is going to be greater emphasis and training toward de-escalation. So I think the question you're asking, Mike, is what not just Chief Putney, but every police chief in this country is asking. It is there's not an easy, simple answer, and that's why people are trying to figure this out.
Well, we will revisit this in October when those new policy guidelines are released. The Internet of Things has come to the attention of Charlotte City Council this week in the form of the Ring doorbell and video footage that it produces at your front door. A Charlotte resident, Joseph Mark Golis, says he is concerned that police nationwide have broadly expanded their surveillance capabilities. Those are his words, through the Ring app. That app enables you as the homeowner, who, if you install the doorbell, to see people coming and going at your front door and to talk to them remotely on your phone or somewhere in the house, even when you're not at home. And the doorbell's camera, is triggered by movement at your front door or on the street. Wherever it sees movement, it turns itself on and starts recording. Is the concern here that police departments are tapping into that video somehow without the homeowner's knowledge? How? You're saying yes, Eric, so how?
Well, from being at the meeting Monday night, that was my interpretation of what the citizen who was speaking was saying. And as soon as he finished speaking, then a representative of the police department came up and said, absolutely not. That's not the way this works. You have to opt in essence, for neighbors or the police department to watch.
Well, that's what they say. And there are all these security systems that now can hear you and see you and talk to you and you know, tell the intruder, you've broken in, go identify yourself.
The Luke Kuechly gnome is in charge.
How do we know? And I had one of those systems, by the way, and I asked the installer, how do I know that you're not watching me or listening to me all the time? Well, we can't do that. How do I know that?
It's an excellent question, and I would just point back to, remember the scandal with Apple and FaceTime, or was it, another app. Anyway,
we know
that they were able to watch.
Hey, why don't we ask Siri or Alexa what they think?
Well, we know that Siri, Alexa, and
cover that camera.
Exactly right. That they can turn these cameras on anytime they want. I'm holding my cell phone up. They can turn these cameras on anytime. They can turn the microphones on anytime. In fact, hackers do it all the time, which is why people like Mark Zuckerberg keeps a piece of tape over the camera on his laptop, because he knows it can come on anytime. How do we know? And why hasn't Ring gotten out in front of this? Because this could kill them.
Hundreds of cities across the United States participate in this program.
Yes, I know. my point exactly. Thank you.
Can anyone hear us now? That's what I'm...
No, you have to have a special app.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I think when this came up during the council meeting, I know Mayor Val Isles had questions about what Ring is and how this works, and she did promise that this will come up again in the future.
Well, you know who else has concerns about this?
Tariq Bakari.
Tariq Bakari.
I just want to make sure that it is ultimately the end consumer and their ability to say, yes, you can see this. And it's not some kind of carte blanche ability to say, you now have full access.
Okay, so will how this works get cleared up before CMPD signs onto this and starts using it, and before Ring goes out of business, as millions of people say, I'm not putting that on my house.
Supposedly, right?
It's my understanding that the partnership is already in
effect. It's already happening.
So if someone steals a package off your door and you have a Ring doorbell, you could share that footage.
Yeah, I believe they have talked about arrests that were made based in part on Ring video. So this is something that they need to clear up. You know, the argument here is that it is something you have to opt into, and if you don't opt into it, then you should be protected. And I guess we need to more clearly and forcefully determine that that is in fact true.
Well, people also need to know that if they opt into the Internet of Things, like I can control my thermostat from my phone right now, that other people, if they want to, could hack in and control my thermostat too. So you've got to understand that if you make it use of these devices, that you're opening yourself up to a lack of privacy.
Mike Collins says go off the grid.
No, yes, that's right. Live in a bunker. If you recall, the county assumed ownership of Marshall Park in a land swap with the city so that we could put the Uptown Ballpark where it is right now. And that was back in 2007. And back in 2007, they gave the county until the end of this year, I don't know why this is, to sell Marshall Park to a developer, or the city could take it back. Well, we're coming toward the end of the year. The city council is looking into giving a 10-year extension to the county on selling this. First of all, why do they have to sell it? Secondly, why give them a 10-year extension? Just take it back.
I think right now what has been explained to me is a lot of city council members want to know why that 2007 city council put in that provision that we can get this back if you don't sell it by 2019. Because I don't recall them doing that for a lot of other deals. So we have to go back to a time when Pat McCrory was mayor and Andy Doolin was on city council. And I think James Mitchell was on that city council, but he didn't seem to have any information that he could share with council on his perspective from that time, at least on Monday. So that's what they're kind of trying to do, is figure out why that this is a thing. Councilman Braxton Winston was the one really raising the alarm here, saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't give this back. We have to take a look at this and see whether this is still the best use of land.
Well, there's a bunch of controversy swirling around at least one developer for this new project called Brooklyn Village, which would be where Marshall Park is, and the environment around it, because that's where Brooklyn, the neighborhood, used to be. And they want to take the park, which they say is underused, and cut its size way down to the size of a postage stamp and build condos and apartments all around it. Why is that controversial, and why hasn't it happened already?
Well, we're kind of getting into two things here. There's the first piece that Joe was talking about with the 2007 deal. Why did they do it? Why is council now faced with this decision? But then the second part is the larger factor, which is the county went out and made this deal with a private developer to bring in this big project with all kinds of multiple uses and developments, and it's really not moving anywhere. And so the county is now in a bit of a panic. Some in the county have wanted to redo the deal, though they really don't have many options, and the developer is moving much slower than anticipated. So you have all kinds of things going in all kinds of directions.
And there have been some issues with the developer, too. In the past, this, I think they're based in Miami or something, this guy has abandoned other projects. So there's doubt as to whether or not this would actually come to fruition when the time comes for them to buy it and start planning it.
I think there's also a growing sense of attitude where, do we need another major apartment complex? You can't drive anywhere without seeing one being built.
I can give you the answer to that if you want.
And also, I mean, the city's perspective here is if they don't extend this deal, they may lose out on affordable housing for this development. But
right.
Something to keep in mind here is it's only about 100 units of affordable housing. It's from 60 to 80 AMI, which really isn't the city's critical need right now. It's really that 30 AMI that the city needs, and this won't address that.
Very quickly, Mike, there's one other factor, which is there are some on council who feel like they got into a deal with the county and they don't want to just sort of leave them in the lurch.
So, a frequent member of this roundtable, you'll pardon the expression, Joe, WBTV's Nick Ochsner, with his colleague at Channel 3, David Hodges, reported this week that half of the members of Charlotte City Council spent thousands of dollars on taxpayer-funded travel in excess of the amounts they were budgeted to spend. How over budget are those members? Do we know? I do. I'm asking you.
It varies from, a couple $100 to a couple thousand.
Exactly. Vylisle spent more than double the $6,000 allowance, which he's been doing a lot of traveling because of getting the RNC situation squared away. Dimple Ashmera spent nearly double her allowance. I think council members get $3,000 and the mayor gets four.
I think it's four and six.
Six. Okay. Yeah. LaWanna Mayfield is about $3,000 over budget. James Mitchell spent roughly $13,000, which included a trip to Detroit on November 17th. By happenstance, that's when the Panthers were playing the Lions, and he wrote down that the trip as a return for sight of a Detroit sports facility as a reason for visiting there. Most of the council members were way under budget, as you reported, Joe, but for those who went over, have they attempted to explain why? And is this normal? Does this happen every year?
I think that, in a city like Charlotte, we have a part-time council with full-time expectations.
They don't get paid a lot.
They don't. And I think that, a city the size of Charlotte, you should expect your leaders to be traveling. And, some of this may look bad on paper. This isn't necessarily unusual to have city leaders going from city to city to find more economic opportunities.
if I could raise Tariq Bakari's name again. He actually responded to this in the comments to the video that we were referring to earlier. He was the one who I think had the lowest amount that was over, and he said it wasn't very much. He also raised some questions about the process for putting in for these things and that it wasn't cast in stone, and he'd like to see some changes in it. But I think this story was a classic reporter going out, getting some public documents, and digging up what was there. And to me, the most damning thing in here is what you mentioned about James Mitchell's trip to visit a sports facility in Detroit that just happened to be where the Panthers were playing.
At the same time, though, Detroit does have that, what is it, Ford Field, which is what David Tepper wants to bring Charlotte.
So he can justify that as a research trip.
I think he was researching.
Okay, all right. And it's a good thing that Tariq Bakari, that Facebook is free. Otherwise, he'd be way over budget. I mean, last month, an airport worker at Charlotte Douglas Airport was killed when his baggage hauling device overturned as he made a sharp turn to avoid an object on the tarmac. Workers out there have asked for safety improvements since that incident. Are they going to get them?
It seems like it. So that incident took place at gate E3. The concern that workers have is between gates E31 and E38, which is really the back right corner of the E concourse. They sent me some photos this week, and it's just pitch black. You can't see the lines.
They call it Death Valley.
Yes, they call it Death Valley. And even though that worker, Mr. Hudson, he didn't die in that part of the airport, they want to prevent that from happening. And so what the airport is doing now is they're conducting a lighting analysis of those sections of the airport.
They want me to tell you that Cam Newton is not playing this week in the Panthers game. I'm not sure why, because no one on this panel could ever talk about sports, including me. But they want me to tell you that, and because he's out with this, Lisfranc injury to his foot. And they've been really kind of cagey about this. But Kyle Allen, who saved the day last weekend, is playing this weekend as our quarterback. And Cam is out indefinitely. If Kyle continues to perform the way he did Sunday, does that leave Coach Rivera with a very difficult decision?
Possibly. I mean, the Rams sort of had a situation with Kurt Warner and Mark Bolger a decade or so ago, where Mark Bolger came in for Kurt Warner when he was hurt and he stole his job, essentially. But I think Cam Newton is our quarterback. He's our franchise leader. He's a role model in this city. And if he's 100% back to the old Cam, he will be the starting quarterback. But Kyle Allen did great, and I'm looking forward to this Sunday, and I hope he continues to do well.
Okay, so now the voting machines, they've been trying to decide on voting machines for the 2020 election, and today is the day, Joe, that they choose the machine. When will they tell us what we're using?
1 o'clock meeting at the Board of Elections, and the machine will roll out temporarily for one precinct in the 2019 election. That's when they'll test it, and then they'll sign off on it with the county.
All right. There's a big race this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway. It is called the Roval, R-O-V-A-L. It is the second year, I believe, for this race, and it takes place on the oval, but also in the infield. And you know all about this, David, for some reason. I'm not sure why, but you do.
Actually, Mike, I got to take a ride on the Roval a couple of weeks ago. It was a hoot. It was great. We got up into 90 miles an hour or so going through these really sharp turns. And this is a new course out there at the Charlotte Motor Speedway that they adopted partly to create some fan excitement at a time when, you know, the number of fans and TV viewership is falling for NASCAR. The idea was to have a race with more excitement, and last year, the first year they did this, they got more excitement than they bargained for. There was many wrecks, including one at the very end of the race that determined the winner. Two of the cars wrecked, and Ryan Blaney drove through the mess and won the race. I think it's going to be a fun race for people to watch, and I think it's one of the many improvements at the Speedway, including that giant scoreboard and their big sun deck and all of these things that they're trying to use to get people to come back to watch NASCAR.
And the Speedway has gone private. Bruton Smith and family have bought back all the public shares, and for some reason that has caused some controversy. Why?
Not really controversy. I think it's a trend in the industry. Another large publicly held company was bought by NASCAR itself recently. Eric, you've done a lot of reporting on this.
Yeah, well, there is some blowback from some of the shareholders who think they could have gotten a better price, but a majority of the shareholders are going along with it, so it will happen. By the way, put your money on Lightning McQueen on Saturday.
Okay, so I take it back. We can't talk about sports, but we can talk about racing. It must be in the DNA. That was what it
is. It's a Charlotte thing.
That's right. Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Business Journal, Katie Peralta, senior editor and reporter for the Charlotte Agenda, Joe Bruno, reporter for WSOC-TV Channel 9 Eyewitness News, and David Borax with WFAE Earwitness News. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.